Reading travelled east in search of an elusive away win, but there was to be no ghetto gospel despite the many changes for Sellers' men, as Tyrese Tupac Shakur Campbell was amongst the goals to send the visiting fans home with so many tears in their eyes and hoping for a Hail Mary against Fleetwood Town on Tuesday night. The things we do for love, eh? Welcome to episode 356 of the Tyle S10 podcast. I am your host, Ben Thomas, and joining both myself and Ross tonight is a lad who needs zero introduction, but will get one anyway. It's Bobbins. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I think I'm over the weekend now. I think it's behind us, and we just have to look forward, don't we? You can sense the excitement in my voice.
Exactly, buzzing for two home games in a week. Ross, what did you think of my introduction there? Did you like that?
I liked it. Yeah, it took me. I'm glad you went to Bobbins first, because I was drinking water and I came close to spitting it out all over my computer. So that was very good, Ben. Very nice. How long did that one take you?
I probably wrote it about 10 times because I was trying to get as many references to Tupac Shakur as I could.
Nice. You did well. Very good.
I think I did that all right. So
yeah, I think you did
it's,
good.
It's not often that you get someone scoring a goal as good as that, but also what a name. Tyrese Tupac Shakur Campbell.
There were a few names on that team. The Blackett Tyler tripped me up a few times, but I'm sure we'll get there.
Yeah, well, listen, before we get into the recap against Charlton Athletic, massive thanks as always to our sponsors and very good friends, ZCZ Films, who continue to just to support us, basically. And we couldn't do it without you guys. So thank you so much for, for all your help. And also thank you to you guys for tuning in and listening to us after, another torrid weekend for not just the men, but also for the women as well. So, yeah, we'll get into all that in due course. And we'll head into the recap right now, I think.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, where do we start with this one? I seem to say that every time we jump into the recap.
Yeah, that's the life of being a Reading fan podcaster
exactly.
Right now.
Listen, we'll come to you first, Bobs, because there was changes made before kickoff. Obviously for the starting 11 and to the squad in general. And I think I was pretty disappointed when I saw the same formation. And myself and Ross and we talked about this on the previous pod, and Sim had written a fairly well put together article in the week about change formation as well. Mm-hmm. What did you make of those changes, first of all, before we get into the performance? It's pointless to say did they work, because it didn't. But, of the players that didn't play, were you expecting anyone that should have been in the starting 11 at that point, at, 2:50 before we started the game?
It's a weird thing. It almost seems like no matter what he kind of tries, you think you've seen it before already. So when a player comes in, you kind of think, oh, we've tried this, haven't we? And the players that we're crying out to see, like we want to see a bit more of Elliot. But he doesn't seem to be getting a look in from the start, and he has limited time to affect things. But I thought Michael Craig coming in was good. I've seen him play for the under-21s, and him and Rashesha in midfield have got a really nice thing going on. His inclusion, I thought, certainly helped us in the first half. Second half, when things started to go a little bit out of shape, he probably was running out of legs as well. And it's a lot to ask him for do a whole 90. But his inclusion, I think, it is something that Sellers is trying to do, trying to solidify those two DMs more than anything, because he's tried Savage, and Savage hasn't got the strength basically to do that. Nesta coming back in makes sense. He can give us that vertical presence where Carson's a little bit edgy, but can produce decent crossing. It just seemed to be just pinning a tail on something at the moment and trying to see if something works. And I don't think any of us really knows what the magic bullet is, if there is one. But for me, I'd like to see Elliott play a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously you mentioned Smith and Nesta Guinness-Walker there.
Yeah,
I thought they were probably two of the better players on the pitch at the time, really. I didn't think Guinness-Walker was particularly bad. I thought he was, you know, for someone who's playing left-back, he was kind of moving forward a lot more than potentially Aziz was at that moment, and obviously Nims on the other side. So it's difficult to kind of look at those players and say, actually, do you know what, you didn't have a good game, because I think they did, both stats wise, but also they just brought something else to the team. Now obviously we can sit here and say, well, we still lost 4-0, but I think you're right about trying to pin it on something and trying to make it work. Yeah. I mean, you know, Ross, we've talked to death about the formation. Is it time now to really look at that 4-2-2 and go, you know, that's it now, that's gone, we've got to move on and change it? Or do you think he's still going to persist with this, you know, quite narrow, effectively uncreative formation that makes us very, very easy to play against, particularly away from home?
Yeah, I'm not actually going to talk about the formation. I don't think the formation was the issue on Saturday. I'm going to disagree that Nesta Guinness-Walker was good. I thought he was pretty poor. He got dunked on for the second goal in particular, whereby a guy who's not that much taller than him went straight over the top of him. And when your guy comes in the seam behind Abby, you know, you're expecting the left back or the full back to step in there and make sure that you're closing down that option for heading into the net. And Nesta Guinness-Walker didn't get there again on time. We're playing Harley Dean at center back, who cannot pass progressively to save his life. And when you're using players who don't have the qualities to do the role that you need in those positions, and your formation's not going to work. So I don't know if it's necessarily the formation, but the roles within it. And playing Tyler Bindon at right back, for instance, is just never going to work. That player is clearly meant to play center back. I personally think that I'm pretty done with Harley Dean in the team at this point. He's not doing as much defensively as Nelson Abbey, and he's not doing as much offensively as Nelson Abbey. So what's really the point of having him in there? I would bring Bindon in, and I think it's surprising that Abrefa hasn't seen more of a look in so far. So we went on about the formation for ages last week, and I do think that there's a discussion to be had there. Like, maybe there are formations that, with a young group of guys clearly suffering for confidence, you maybe play something a little bit more simple, but doesn't appear to be what's going to happen under Sellers. So if we're going to persist, I'd rather persist with the players that are going to be able to do the right roles in this formation. And for me, that would be Tyler Bindon starting at right center back. And then, again, having an actual real right back. Is Yiadom injured? What's going on with Yiadom right now?
He's suspended.
Still suspended from having a fight on the bench?
Still okay. Suspended.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you use foul and abusive language from a bench position, basically.
So
he was in the away end, actually, with the fans. Him and Mbengue were in the away end on Saturday.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's good.
Which is an interesting... it's an interesting tactic, given that, you know, one of them is there sort of accidentally and the other one is there because they couldn't keep the mouth shut. But I digress. One player we haven't talked about so far is Sam Smith, who came in for his second debut. I'm hoping that he bucks my kind of theory of never going back somewhere. For you, Bobbins, how did he do, you know, coming back into the side after what? 2-3 months of rejoining the club, you know, how do you think he fared against a fairly solid Charlton outfit, to be honest?
I think personally he did okay, but much like Ross's point, in that I'm not sure his role was correct. He seemed to be hunting for the ball and dropping really deep. I mean, I know Ballard did that a few games ago when he was effectively playing as a 10, but I don't think that was necessarily what the intention was. But he did okay, but the service to him is just missing, isn't it? Kelvin just seems to be rushing around like a headless chicken at the moment. He's not thinking straight, but that's for another point later on that we can talk about. But I think Smith did okay. I think Sellers is pinning a lot on him to be that experienced head up front to kind of guide Kelvin a bit more, and to bring others into play. But we've got to stop playing like headless chickens first before we can do that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we at 0-0 we didn't look too bad. You know, half time it was kind of a fairly turgid affair, really, kind of cancelled each other out a little bit. There was a couple of block shots. I think one was from wing, and and then we kind of grew a little bit in the second half. We came out with, you know, from my point of view, a little bit more energy and a little bit more kind of endeavour, particularly in the final third. But, you know, the goal goes in, and we'll get onto the goals now, really. The first goal goes in, and literally, you know, I was stood next to Sim, and it was almost like someone sucked the, enthusiasm. He's not the most enthusiastic player ever, but, like, it was like he literally, the goal went in, and he just went, ugh. Like, and that was literally his response, and everyone else around me. And you can just see straight away that the players know that they're not going to get anything out of the game. And I said in the kind of the post-match video that I did, I don't think at any point in the game we were completely outplayed, but we give the ball away so cheaply in those kind of non-contact areas when we're under no pressure whatsoever. And it literally just goes from, you know, left to right, middle to front, and it's in the back of the net, you know? I mean, with those first two goals, you know, Ross, I don't know if you kind of looked at those in a bit more detail, you know, since the game is finished, but they weren't great to be in a situation where they were 2-0 up after those. What was your take on those first two goals, Ross?
It's partially why I was slightly disagreeing that Guinness Walker had a good game, and pointing out Bindon playing at right back when he really shouldn't be, because one of the things that was causing us huge issues on Saturday was the seam between the center backs and the fullbacks was just wide, wide open. And I think that's because, you know, Sellers is aware too that the width in the formation is meant to come from the fullbacks coming out and coming forward. And they tried to do that. Bindon, within the first 2 or 3 minutes, was standing nearer the corner flag than he was the halfway line. So they managed to get forward, but then they couldn't get back necessarily. And that's, again, an issue. We've talked about Guinness Walker before being a fullback who can do one thing well, whether that be attack or defense, and Bindon not being a right back. So, yeah, I think that it's just the same thing over and over again. Charlton running into those seams in sort of the half space on the left and right side, and then just cutting the ball back across. I think the second goal, you know, we get a little bit unlucky in that, you know, it's an absolutely fantastic hit, of course. But if you're allowing teams to cross into your box or to just outside of your box from those more dangerous half spaces, then you're going to give up high chance shots. And I think that's the issue, really. It's again trying to find players who can go into this formation and play the roles that are actually needed out of them. We're missing a few key things right now, and I think that's causing us the same issues with goals over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, the second goal was just, well, it was a bullet, absolute bullet, kind of, you know, stood right behind it, and he's just, well, yeah, he's caught it so sweetly, and you know, Button, to be fair, had absolutely no chance with that. No. And you know, once that goal goes in, Bobbins, we then, you know, we're kind of 3-4, you know, sort of later on in the game. What did you make of the response after the second goal from all the departments in the team at that point? You know, obviously, we could say it wasn't good enough, but did you see any signs of a response from that point, or was it just completely and utterly game over and kind of damage limitation by then?
Yeah, you touched on it earlier, and that, you know, Sim's reaction of, I think, is pretty much the player's reaction as well, because, you know, they've got no reference point to say, oh, we've done this before and we can get out of this. They haven't got that, either last year's players or this year's players. They haven't got that collective enthusiasm, not the word, but, you know, in a and a gumption, if you like, to go, right, you know, we can still get something out of this. Look at the first half. That was cool. We can do something with this. But, you know, there's no one picking that up. And, you know, like Harley Dean, for instance, you know, he's supposed to be the experienced player. You know, where's his leadership? Where are we going to get some momentum from if, you know, players like that don't exhibit it? And I think that it's that historical thing that just keeps mounting up. Everyone knows that the away record is abysmal. And, you know, if they scored a goal in the first half and Charlton scored two, they can go, well, we've scored a goal. But we don't score an awful lot of goals either. So you're either relying on individuality or people stepping up, and we've got neither.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right, and I think that comes through in the collapsing after conceding, and then also not scoring goals. I think is linked to similar things, which is confidence and not having a reference point to when things have gone better. Obviously, like it's been now what? When was the last time Reading played well? Probably the start of the Paunovic run, back in like 2019-20. So. Or maybe 2020, 21. So it's been, you know, it's been a long time since any of these players can really look back and say, hey, well, we've come back from a deficit before or anything like that. And I think that's part of what gets them when they do get a chance. You know, they're not thinking, oh, well, last time I scored, I put it up and left here. They're thinking, oh, gosh, this is my one chance this week. I got to slam this as hard as I can. Straight into the goalkeeper, unfortunately, frequently. So,
and I think defensively, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was thinking, I was looking at the goals, and like defensively, we're sort of playing by numbers, and we're thinking, here's where the ball's going to go, and I'm going to attempt to be there. And like for the first goal, Aziz was sort of semi-assisting Bindon, but neither of them were engaging. So it's like, well, the cross is going to come in then. And then the cross does come in, and then Abby weirdly jumps forward. And then, as Ross says, Nesta doesn't do what he should. And then the second one, you see the players retreating into the box, but no one's picking anybody up. They're just saying, you need to be here when that situation happens. But they're not picking up any men in the process of it. Yeah. So what's the point? And that's where Tupac Shakur, you know, had bucket loads of space to do what he did. And that's the thing at the moment. They're not thinking in the moment. They're thinking, what has the coach told me to do? But they're not engaging. They're not picking up a runner. They're not doing anything that's intelligent. And I don't know how you can instill that into players without experience, and they haven't got it. So... reference points are all missing.
I mean, I said at the time, there is little to no composure in this side whatsoever. Nothing. Oh. And I think it was the third goal, and I might be doing him a disservice here, but I think Guinness Walker gave it away to the man in front of him under no pressure whatsoever. And it was one pass that was switched, another pass into the box, and it was a goal. And you think, that's just basics, right? That really is just absolutely ridiculous. And it, you know, they then went on to score another one in the 94th minute. But, you know, to concede four goals in 40 minutes, almost pretty much to the minute, you know, one every 10 minutes is just ridiculous. And I was watching how Charlton was set up, and there was a point when I think it was 0-0 second half, and someone skewed a shot out for a throw-in, or it might be in a corner or something. And George Dobson, who was the captain for Charlton, just grabbed hold of the player in a really supportive way and was like cajoling him. I think he even gave him a little kiss on the cheek and stuff and just said, like, come on, get on with it. And, you know, you talk about leadership, Bobbins, and we've said this before, you know, we don't want to go after players. But when you look at the level of experience that is in that side, you know, that there should be people in there that you can look at and go, he's going to help me out here. He's going to talk. There just didn't seem to be any sort of cohesion in the conversations that were happening and the way that they were communicating and the way that they were kind of body language of each other and stuff like that. So it was all very odd, really. The one player that I do want to talk about, because myself and Ross had a little bit of a disagreement over the weekend about, is Lewis Wing. Now, I don't have a problem with him generally. My issue really is that the midfield is totally unbalanced at the moment. And Wing is, for me at the moment, a part of the problem. He's not part of the solution. You know, Ross, what what are you going to say that's going to convince me that actually Lewis Wing needs to start the next game? What have you seen in him that I haven't?
So to me, Lewis Wing looked like the performance where he actually finally looked fit. At least in the first half, he was moving around a lot faster than I've seen him move around previously. I remember seeing him make an appearance in the first game of the season where he essentially looked like a tugboat moving around out there. So good to see him actually moving with some agility this time. And then I do think he had a much better first half than second half for sure. I don't think that he's one of, you know, you want him to be. Actually, let's get there. So I thought he had a better first half than second half. There were a couple of shots that went in the first half that I thought were actually pretty impressive. The curling one early on, which almost caught the goalkeeper out. That goes in and the game's completely different. And again, you know, we've had Savage doing this a little bit. That is something that one of those center mids should be doing, is popping up on the edge of the box once Reading have dragged it down there to take shots from outside the box. So I liked what I saw there. And again, a little bit more energy than he's had in previous weeks. The issue, certainly not doing the leadership portion that we need necessarily from him yet, but do we necessarily know that Lewis Wing is our leader, or do we just hope that he is because he's one of the few people above the age of 25, on our roster, as I know you like when I say.
You've done two Americans there. You did one on, like, got dunked on. What's that, $2 or two English pounds in a box? I don't know, something along those lines.
$2.
We never decided what currency we were dealing with, but you owe something, right? You owe something.
Yeah, probably. A couple cents.
I mean, look. Yeah, exactly. I don't have an issue with Lewis Wing, right? I have an issue collectively with the midfield, and I have done for probably the last, you know, in terms of playing 3 or 4 weeks. Massive, right? Because I don't see how you can look at the way the team, in terms of the personnel and the kind of the talent that we've got, and leave, you know, Elliot and Savage on the bench. I don't understand how you look at that game and go, do you know what, I'm going to bench those two. For me, they have to start every game. You know, in terms of Lewis Wing, he played 90 minutes. He had 89% accurate passes compared to 96% from Craig, who played 6 minutes less than he did. He didn't create any chances. He had 33% shot accuracy. He had 78 touches, two of those were in the opposition box, and generally just didn't attack enough, right?
I agree, he didn't get into it. Yeah, so I was going to say, he didn't get into the box enough. I mean, Michael Craig was playing the sprayer role, so I mean, he will have higher pass accuracy playing higher, further back on the field.
But you can do that with Michael Craig further back in the field, right? That game was crying out for a little bit of creative and a little bit of composure. And for me, you know, Elliot and Savage would have provided that. I would have liked to have seen Ballard start over Smith, personally. I don't think that was a wise choice. I don't have any issues with Iha Bitterman, really. But when you've got a, you know, for us, a plethora of strikers that are now clearly all fit and that are vying to go. You know, when Ballard came on, he had a lot of energy. He created more chances statistically. And I just felt that.
Yeah,
you know, having Wing in that role just didn't make sense. I mean, I'm not asking you to pick sides, Bobs, but who are you going to side with? Are you going to side with me in terms of Wing doesn't start the next game, or are you going with Ross, he does start the next game? No pressure.
I would go with Ross. And the only reason for that is, who are we swapping Wing out with? Is it Hutchison or is it Elliot? What kind of deep midfield do we want? Do we want a playmaker in there, or are we shoring it up? What's our thought?
The reason I'm huffing, right, this is a little side note. I was in a shop, which I won't name for legal reasons. It's not a dodgy shop. It was just, you know, I don't want to be like favouritism or brands or whatever. And someone came up to me, no joke, and said, oh, are you Ben from the Tower Stand? I went, yeah. He went, oh, I love your show. And he paused and went, I prefer Ross, though. Yeah. But I was like, are you joking? I was like, he doesn't even live in this country, joker.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, carry on. I digress.
Yeah, so who are we replacing Wing for? Because if it's not a creative player, then the two players that are above them, Aziz and Nibs, who are they receiving the ball from and what are they to do with it? Because for me, watching that game, I couldn't see Wing being able to pick those players out because they're not making intelligent runs for him. So he looks bad because he can't really pass intelligently to someone because what are they doing? So that's where the wing thing becomes an issue, because it's not necessarily his output that's bad. It's the people ahead of him aren't doing things clever enough for him to go, I can pick you out here. I can see that you're stretching space, and so on. So yeah, I'm winging, I'm afraid.
This is where, hold on a second, you can wait your turn. No, hold on for 2 seconds, right? So this is where you play, for me, you play five in midfield, right?
Because if we're talking within the system that we've got, then
exactly
it becomes a different thing. If we're saying 3-5-2, that gives midfield a much, much different kind of scope and view and fluidity and coverage and all sorts.
He's got all these players that can play in midfield and can do a pretty good job on their day, right? But they don't tend to suit that 4-2-2 system for me anyway. Right. So if you play five, you leave Craig further back as a kind of a bit of a shield, you know, kind of we talked about his passes and the pass completion and the accuracy that he has with that. And then you look at getting width down the side. Like we said this a couple of weeks ago, you know, you get Nesta Guinness-Walker in there, potentially get Rashisha in there, who I don't know why he's not played, potentially get a Braithwaite in there as well on the right hand side. And then you can interchange those players that are kind of, you know, could be Elliot, could be Savage, could be Wing. You know, those players will provide a lot more kind of proactive play for me moving forward than we currently have at the moment. Because, yeah, and I do agree, and this, I'm not going to get splinters from sitting on the fence, but when Wing did have the ball, he did tend to lose it a lot more because there was nowhere else to play it. You know, he gets put under pressure, he loses the ball, and it then puts, you know, again, we can do a separate pod about the defence at the moment, but it put them under massive pressure as well. Now, I'm not going to disagree that Abby is not a good player, because he is absolutely fantastic. But these midfield players at the moment, because of their ball retention, are making Abby look good. They're making him look really good because he's always got...
Yeah, he has to rescue.
So, yeah, I think for me, I don't see how he can continue to play that 4-2-2 now with the players that he's currently got at his disposal. I don't see that.
All right, let me be annoying then. Yeah. Devil's advocate time. I'll suggest again, because again, and mostly I'm playing devil's advocate today because we talked about the formation so much last time that I want to talk about roles today, because I think the roles are super important. Like Pep's 4-4-2 is very different from like the 90s 4-4-2 that everyone in England was playing, right? Like they're very different things. So for me, part of the issue right now is that Aziz and Nibs are offering similar-ish things, which is a lot of huff and puff, not too much technical creativity. I would probably say it's time to bench Aziz, and I feel bad for saying that because he actually does create quite a bit in terms of, like, I don't know, he's very good at getting to the last stage, but then not quite actually providing the final touch that we need, whether that be the finish or the assist. So for me, I think one of the issues with the formation is that the two in the middle are doing very similar things. And so I would maybe change it up, and that's where I would put Elliot, is I would take Aziz out, put Elliot in. Some of the best things that we've seen in the really good cup performances, which have obviously been against much weaker opposition, but is getting Elliot up with the striker towards the top right-hand side and really giving them time to move around the box. I'd love to see, you know, Wing on the right side of that midfield, and then you have Elliot ahead of him, and then maybe Vickers, because you got three players there that can play technically, they can play in small spaces, and they like creating chances, but they're going to do it in a very different way to what you would have on the other side if you had, I don't know, Savage or Craig, maybe Rashisha, and then Nibs and Ahib Hatchman on one side. You've kind of got your, you know, it's your love and thunder, right? You got your thunder on the left side with your moving quickly, and then on the right side, your more technical, slow build-up play. So I think that one of the issues is we're just kind of trying to do the same thing on both sides, and maybe mixing up the approach, changing the tempo a little bit with the kinds of players we had would be the way to use this formation and get more out of it.
well, I'll give you my starting 11 for Fleetwood. So we're recording this on Monday night, so less than 24 hours. I'll give you that in the preview when we get into that later on, and you can both just rip it apart and go from there if you want.
Perfect.
Final point, I would say best of luck to Charlton for the rest of the season. Club I've got a lot of time for. Good fans on the whole, cracking little ground at any level, let alone a League One. And, I have to say, despite the result, I did enjoy being in that part of the world, because it's kind of London, but not London in a weird sort of way. It's a
classic, like, Barclays venue too, if you know that meme. Like, Charlton were the first Premier League team that I saw come to the Medeski when I was younger. And they are like going to the Valley and Alan Kirbishley and all those mid-noughties memories of that team. Like, I agree with you, for some reason they're etched into my football memory as well.
We don't often do it. We don't often compliment other teams, but I thought they were, they were very, very patient on Saturday. They played the game really, really well, and, in some respects played like an away team should, but they were at home. They did exactly what they needed to, took their chances, and, fair play to them. So, good luck to our friends at Charlton for the rest of the season. Right, we're going to head into the mailbag. We've got a few bits and pieces to get into, so we're going to have a very short break, and then we'll get back into that in just a moment.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, mailbag time. A couple of random bits before we actually get into things that have been sent in for us. Tickets were announced today against the MK Dons, £15 for a fully grown adult to attend that game in the Sir John Stand, but also Club 1871. Seems a little bit expensive to me. I appreciate the club have got to make some money, but £15 after a fairly heavy load at home is quite an interesting one. And the other point, which I was quite cheered about actually, is that we've signed a kind of a deal, like a partnership with Wexford in Ireland, which again is quite a positive thing. And the reason for that, not because it's Wexford, we've had some good success, or reasonable success, shall we say, with some Irish players in the past. But a club that is about to go out of business would not do that. And I think it's pretty good that Wexford have decided to partner with us. So fingers crossed that this is a start of some fairly positive news for us moving forward, but we'll get into that a little bit later on. Right, where do we start with? There's a lot of bits. Talking of teams going out of business, Benjamin Vickers, long-time contributor to the mailbag. Thank you very much again, sir, for your time.
Just going to start calling it Benjamin's mailbag in a minute.
Yeah, he loves it. Yeah. Absolutely loves it. Big if bash. RFC folds, does that free us all up to support another team? Bobbins, shoot. Oh. What are you going to say?
Is this after the period of mourning?
Yeah,
I guess so.
I don't know. I couldn't read that far into it and go, do you know what? I'm going to support Aldershot now because they're literally 10 minutes away from where I live. I couldn't see myself doing that, to be fair. I'd probably go a little bit further afield because
It's difficult. I mean, we are blessed in Berkshire with a lot of, I say, long league teams, but kind of well-run non-league teams. But I'm with you. Like, I've always said that as long as there's a Reading Football Club, that's it for me.
League Two, Conference South, whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's in our blood, isn't it? And you can't just extract that and replace it for me.
Yeah.
Can I interest any of you lot in the fandom of the New England Revolution? It's my second team over here in America.
That's your nearest professional team, right?
Correct. Yeah. Although I will, I'll put a quick shout out. The USL 1, which is the third tier in America, is coming to Portland, Maine. So we're very excited up here in Portland at the moment.
Fair play.
Yeah, well, but so I'll have a third team as well. That'll be good.
Not fancy Portland Timbers?
No, too far away. That's on the other side of the country.
Yeah, I know that, obviously. Yeah. The minute it left my mouth, I realised that it was a different Portland. So don't.
You're not the first person who's had that issue, don't worry. I've had friends here whose parents have come to visit and they've booked hotels in the wrong state, so don't worry, you're not the only one. Anyway, back to Reading.
We don't like Portland Timbers. No, boo. Nah. Trees. Hate trees. We don't hate trees. Don't tell that we hate the environment or whatever, because we do. We don't even. Shut up. Stop talking. Next one. Paul Mortimer says, do we know if a potential takeover is reliant on us staying in this division? Good question. I don't know. Does anyone know?
That's a horrid question, though, too, isn't it? Because it gives you an idea of where the fan base is in that they're thinking, oh, gosh, now here comes another relegation. But that's what happens when you have a start to the... I said the start to the season was going to be poor, right? But it has been really poor now. And this is bad. We're getting in danger of being cut adrift. So I don't know what that means in terms of a takeover, but we started talking about whether Reading's fans' minds were sort of shifting towards this relegation fight last time we spoke, Ben. And this would indicate to me that, yes, that's very much where they're headed.
I mean, side question, Bobbins. Do you think we're going to get relegated?
Oh, wow.
I don't know why I'm laughing. I don't know why you're laughing.
I'm going to say no. Only because if you look at the league table now, there's plenty of other pretty crappy teams down there. I mean, if we lose to Fleetwood tomorrow, then that answer gets reevaluated completely. But I think at some point, either it's with this manager or with someone else, we'll kick in at some point and we'll win a few. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, wow, seismic change. We're winning six on the road on the spin, anything like that. But, you know, win, lose, draw, lose, win, draw. You know, that kind of semi-normal kind of pattern should be enough to get us out, I think.
My worry, like as Ross said, is being cut adrift at the moment. And, you know, obviously the 4 points would be a massive help to have back, but we'd still be, to my knowledge, in the relegation zone,
yep.
You know, albeit a little bit kind of further in touch. I think, with all due respect to Fleetwood, it's quite a positive thing that we play them tomorrow, like now, in terms of where they are and where we are. Obviously, Saturday, which we'll talk about sort of briefly later on, is a completely different ball game, quite literally, because they're just, you know, it looks like they're going to walk the league at the moment. So it's going to be difficult, but I would agree. I still think there's enough, whether we are able to do it ourselves or whether we're kind of boosted by the fact that other teams are not so good. I think we've got enough to stay up. But I like the idea that someone comes in and goes, you can have £150 million if you stay up. Like, I like the kind of the narrative behind that. It's quite, you know, do or die, which is quite good. There you go. See, little plug there for the group, potentially. Alistair, die out. Says, given there was a lot of sport on at the weekend, my question is, what is your favourite sport outside of football? Let's start with you, Ross. Please say something like lacrosse.
What do you want me to say? Lacrosse? I don't watch that one. That one's not big. I like ice hockey out here and American football a lot. There's something over here called Red Zone, which is excellent, whereby basically when the ball goes into a dangerous place in American football, the TV channel just hops around and it shows you what's going on in every single game at the same time when there's exciting plays happen. It is fantastic Sunday afternoon entertainment. So I've spent many happy afternoons watching. It's basically like watching 11 goalkeepers on each team throw themselves after the ball. So American football can be pretty fun.
Yeah, it just goes on for so long, though, doesn't it?
It does, but, you know, it's great for snacking. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Just once a week.
That is true. Bobbins, what are you saying?
I'm a bit of a UFC fan, so that would be my alternate. I've kind of, like, drifted away from it over the last couple of years, but I'm sort of getting back into it now. But yeah, back in the day, Anderson Silva, what a legend he was. If you haven't seen Anderson Silva before, look him up. My God,
I've never got into spectacular ways. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll check that out. I mean, I don't know if it's a sport, but wrestling would be up there for me. Absolutely love a bit of wrestling.
Is it a sport?
Yeah,
is it?
It is a sport. Okay, fine. So we'll
say
no,
that. I'll give it a sport. Even if it's not like a competition, it's an athletic pursuit. You know, you got to be athletic to smash yourself on the floor of a ring and get right back up.
And that, you know, those guys and girls work really, really hard. Like, they're up and down the road, you know, different shows every night and stuff. So yeah, really positive. I like the NBA. Love basketball. Again, similar vein. Like, it's just intense, like, you know, the athleticism involved, the skill involved, fantastic. But I think I'd have to say rugby. I was good at rugby as well, right? I could have done something in rugby, and I just chose
football. Did we actually get this question, Ben, or did you just want to talk
about
it?
No, we did. I'm not just choosing it so I can talk about myself.
All right.
It was actually a question.
Nice.
So, yeah, thanks for that, Alistair, because I'm not making this stuff up. It's here, look. It's on the phone. Right there.
Thank you, Alistair. See it.
I did see the question myself, so.
And then I just got a bit silly with it, really, and I just said, kebab or curry? What are you saying?
Curry.
Bobbins, go for you. Kebab or curry?
Curry.
All right, both
curry. Never had a kebab in my life.
You never had a kebab?
I like a kebab, but it's got to be a proper, you got to go to a Greek place and get it done, like a gyro or gyro, however you say that.
Yeah. Greatest winger we've ever had, Ross. At Reading, not just generally.
I gotta go with Jimmy Kebbe just for the fun of the socks incident. I know there are others who are possibly better, but in terms of people who stick out in my head, when I think of Reading FC winger, he's the first one.
Mm. Okay. Bobbins, what are you saying?
I'm a bit more old school than that, and I was going to say Kebbe, to be honest, but old Jilksy himself.
Yeah. Jilksy was my first hero, actually. Him and Darius Wadalczyk were my people. I'd have to say Bobby Convoy. I absolutely adored watching Bobby Convoy play. Absolutely adored him. What else did I say? Which player should have played on Saturday but didn't? I think we've kind of covered that, really. Paul, I'd like to go out for a drink with Paul Hunton because he said kebab, he said a brafer, he said Jilksy, and then I asked about pint choice and he put Coors. And I think that's pretty underrated, to be honest with you. I like the idea of someone ordering a pint of Coors. I think that's pretty cool. What else did I say? I think that's pretty much it. There was loads of other people that chipped in. Mike said, Jilksy again, baffled why Elliot isn't getting more starts. We need a lot more from Wing and Nibs. See, he's on my wavelength, old Mike. Tony Dempster loves a nice chicken pathia. Ballard has to play up top.
Yes, Tony.
I just glossed over it. I just read it. I was like,
even when you went from curry to Ballard was quite remarkable.
Well, it's what you have to do in this current, environment. Tony Dempster, again, he's also said Paul Cannonville. And do you know I watched a documentary about him, and I think it was called Black and Blue, in kind of reference to him playing for Chelsea as well.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely stunning. It was, if you can get it on YouTube or something, it's his story. And he just came across like such a good guy. I don't think he was with us for very long, back in the kind of the 80s, but he was a really, really good player. And then Simon Povey, he says kebab. He says a nice pint of Löwenbräu, fair play, Oktoberfest, like that, and Gilks as well. So, yeah, there were some good answers there, but I just thought I'd mix it up a little bit, just to get some different responses.
Brevity.
Yeah, I love that word. Yeah, that, what you said. I like that. That's good. Yeah. Right, we're going to head into the preview now. We've got two games to talk about against Fleetwood Town and Portsmouth Football Club. So we're going to get into that in just a moment.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Right, we play Fleetwood Town for the first time ever tomorrow. Or today, if you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday. I didn't know that. I didn't know that until earlier, actually. I didn't realise it was our first ever game. I don't think there will be many people there. But I will certainly be going just to kind of hope that we can get some positives out of it. Bobbins, you are Ruben Sellers. What do you do for this game?
If I was Ruben Sellers, well, knowing Ruben Sellers, he ain't going to change from the 4-2-2, I don't think. But like Ross alluded to earlier, I would bin off Aziz and give Elliot a shot. I wouldn't start Smith. I think two games in a matter of a few days would be too much. So bring Ballard in, who's clearly effective and fit as a butcher's dog as well. So I don't see any reason not to start him and bring Smith on later on for the last 30. Is a breath a fit?
Well, this is it. I don't know what's going on there. I really don't.
If he is fit, then it's Harley Dean out and a breath are in, and we shift Bindon over. And that would be what I'd go with, I think. I don't think I'd tinker around too much with midfield, but I'd want the advanced players to do an awful lot more to help out players like wing. So that's where I'd be headed, I think.
Ross, it's you know, the end of October or kind of mid to end of October, and we are already faced with what many people are saying, a must not lose game. Do we have enough in this squad to win this game tomorrow night?
I mean, I would hope so. I would think that we have enough in Kelvin Abrefa's legs to win this game tomorrow, because we should be able to commit 9 players to the attack and basically just let Abby do what he's done all season, which is run back, tidy everything up for us, and then Reading go again, basically. Things could have been... I gave him a decent rating on Saturday because things could have been much worse without him. But yeah, no, I would really hope that this is a team that we can beat at home. They've scored fewer goals than us this season, at one of only, what, 2 or 3 teams to manage that feat. So this really would be the one for me whereby we need to kind of maybe throw a caution to the wind a little bit and go out there and try and get a confidence boosting win, because there's no confidence in these players, and any way in which you can boost that, whether that be, you know, Papa pizza trophy, whatever wins, or, you know, trying to beat up on an opponent that you should be beating. And this is an opponent that many people had down as a relegation candidate at the start of the season. Yeah, I think we've got more than enough to beat this team, and it'll be serious questions for Sella's time if we don't win this.
Well, that, you know, that was leading to my next question, because, you know, I kind of alluded to it myself at the weekend, and, you know, there was certainly a few people, rightly or wrongly, in the away end starting to, shall we say, quite heavily question what Sellers was doing. Question to both of you, and you can find out who answers this first. Does the noise around his position and his abilities to manage this club at this level grow louder if we don't win tomorrow night?
Undoubtedly, because if you can't beat the teams around you, then you're not going to beat anyone, really. We certainly couldn't beat Portsmouth on Saturday, so you would have to certainly question his choices, and not necessarily his coaching ability. I'm sure he can coach the players, but if he can't get his message across clearly enough and succinct enough to, you know, spark the players into life, then, you know, by definition, he's on thin ice, isn't he? But, and obviously there's a whole other conversation of, is the state of the club viable enough to sack a manager? But, you know, that's another conversation entirely, really.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, we're getting to, what, it's October 23rd that we're recording this today, and we're getting in serious danger of being marooned at the bottom of the league. I think that, as we talked about a few times, it's really important that the confidence gets boosted again, and it seemed like that might be something that Sellers is able to do a little earlier in the season, but... you know, some of those messages may be wearing a little thinner now, with us not actually picking up the results. So I think we've got another, I think really we're 12 games in, and regardless of who we're playing, we really need to win 2 of the next 4 to show that we have a fighting chance of not just staying up in this division, but being vaguely competitive with this squad and manager. So for me, it's over the next 4 games, we need at least 2 wins. Otherwise, we're going to be in serious trouble.
Well, we have got a fair number of home games coming up across all 3 competitions. It's like we're kind of some sort of European powerhouses, you know, league, Papa John's Pizza Cup, and also the FA Cup as well against MK Dons, which we mentioned briefly earlier. I mean, in terms of the Fleetwood game, I actually took the time to write down my team. You can't see it really, but my handwriting's terrible, and I shall read that to you right now. I've kept Button in goal because I think, well, yeah, okay, he's not been great, but I don't want to be that guy, but I don't think he was that bad on Saturday. I thought he did all right. I'm then going 3 at the back, and I know this won't happen, but I can dream. So Bindon, Abbey, and I did have T-Mac down. I wrote this on Sunday night when I was fuming after the game on Saturday, but huge congratulations to Tom McIntyre and his partner, who have just had a baby. So congratulations, had it in the Royal Barks as well. How Reading can you get? So massive congratulations. I don't think he will be involved in the squad tomorrow, but I could be wrong.
He's injured anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's that. So I think Dean, or I would keep Dean in a three, not in a four, but in a three. I've then put Rashisha or Brafer at right wing back. I've gone Elliot, Craig, Savage, and then Nesta on the left-hand side. And then up top, I've got Vickers and Ballard. And if that team starts in that formation, I will be doing free scrapped cards that are winners to everybody over the next couple.
I'll give you the money myself.
Yeah, I don't think that will happen, but that's what I would choose anyway.
Yeah,
okay. Because I just think that's the most dynamic we've got. And as we've all said, you know, and you guys more eloquently than me, we have to win tomorrow night or today or whatever, whenever you listen to this. So yeah, must win. Final point for Saturday. Obviously, the Portsmouth game is a little bit of a kind of, I say background, that's not quite right. But, you know, Bob Inge, you've kind of been a lot more involved with the protest group than probably myself and Ross. Anything you want to give us on that will help people listen to this kind of, you know, form their own plans and the way they're kind of going with it and how they can get involved and all that sort of stuff, really?
Yeah, I think that, you know, everyone's encouraged to get into town early doors, get the throng going, sup some beer perhaps at the time that permits, get your placards going, get your voices ready, get your best walking shoes on because it's still a 2-mile yomp from town to the SCL. And much like, you know, fans have done before with the tennis balls, is that, you know, make yourself visible, make yourself present, get your voice in good order, and then the game is secondary, isn't it? It's another one of those where, I mean, if we were playing Fleetwood, it might be different, but we're not. We're playing Portsmouth. So in some ways, as much as I hate the phrase, it's a bit of a free hit. The confidence would be good, but not many of us will be going into this game, even if we do beat Fleetwood, thinking that we're going to turn over Portsmouth. But, you know, if the atmosphere is good, it's non-confrontational, but it's still passionate and vocal, as we know we can all do, things are possible. So, yeah, let's see what happens on Saturday.
And it's 12:30 start, isn't it?
Yeah, 12:30 start. I think you can get to the blue collar as early as you want, but 11 o'clock seems to be a pretty decent time to get lubricated, but not too much. And then,
walk it. That's the thing.
Still got to walk it, and you know, hopefully no one's falling over in the process and needing a trip to Royal Barks themselves.
Well, look, you know, it's... You know, things are moving. I think things are moving off the pitch as well in terms of, you know, not just with the protest group, but the way that you know, certain things that I've, little snippets I've, you know, I'm not at the forefront of it at all by any stretch, but, you know, certain things I've heard seem to be that we're sort of moving in the semi-right direction. And I think the key thing really is that, you know, there's interest, and I think that just needs to be firmed up from various different people. But, you know, it's not like we're trying to flog a football club, or I say we, but the people behind it are trying to flog a football club that no one wants. It's, you know, we've always said it's an attractive proposition regardless of the league. And I think it's just trying to kind of expedite the process and kind of speed it up and really make people aware that, you know, the fans aren't going to take it anymore. So, you know, we hope for a really good outcome, of course, on the pitch, but more importantly, we hope for good numbers on Saturday off it, in terms of the march and how people, you know, get there and as you said, kind of share their voices, really. So yeah, hopefully, you know, this time next week we're talking about 6 points and a successful protest and hopefully some positive news you know, in the boardroom, really. That's what we hope for. We're just about out of time, so if you've been listening, thank you so much for your ears and for your time and for giving up We're coming up to about an hour and a bit now, talking about Reading Football Club, which is quite incredible given the current state of affairs. And Bobbins, this will not be the last time that you are on the podcast, but thank you so much for making your debut, shall we say, with myself and Ross in this, whatever this format is these days. It's been a pleasure to have you, sir.
It's been very enjoyable. Glad to be here.
And Ross, you look after yourself. Take care.
Thank you. I hope that this podcast plays a different role in the build-up for the game tomorrow.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, and we're hammering on whether or not we're going to beat Fleetwood and we turn them over 5-0, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? So, really good stuff. Thanks very much, guys. Look after yourselves, and we will see you next week for episode 357, would you believe? Come on, you arse.